Ooh.
Okay, that's eerie.
That is what?
What is that, Heidi?
Well, that's recorded right at my house from the deck. That is, you know, some people like have apps where they have whales so they can fall asleep, the sound of whales or dolphins. This is what I want to do. It's going to be my money-making scheme is ice forming noise. It is
Okay. I was
so.
wondering if there was like a Pachygama whale out there.
No, not at all. It rumbles through the house. It's this really interesting, and it's not loud, so rumble seems like a weird word to say right there, but it is. It's like you feel it in your bones.
Okay, so it like has that like resonance where it like
Yes.
kind of
You can
you almost feel it more than you hear it.
you can hear it kind of moving across the ice, and things are forming and moving, and it'll continue through the winter. So she has it gets when it gets really cold, then it's like popping, you
Oh,
know, like
cool.
the popping of, we were talking about this last week. You're listening to the Season Watch Pod. That's Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton. Last week, I was talking to John Latimer, and he talked about maple trees and the popping when it gets really cold. It must be the sap that freezes, right?
The sap freezing. It expands and kind of cracks some of the wood around it. Now, does the ice you were recording, does it have a covering of snow on it right now?
It has a little bit. It didn't have that much, you know, like an inch and a half, maybe, right when I recorded it. So yeah, that probably muffles things a bit or
Yeah, that was
something.
going to be my question. Like, do you notice that like a heavy snow will muffle the sound, or does it kind of just make it deeper, or
It's just always odd. I don't know how to say it, and I maybe need to get down on the ice. It was a particularly cold night, so I didn't want to get down that close, but I will do that at some point so you really get that sound. I call it an ice chorus because there is a Minnesota author, Sarah Stonich, who wrote a book about a woman, I believe in Iceland, but it has a lot to do with those sounds, the eeriness and the ice. I love when you hear something that just you go, "What? What is that?" My husband was downstairs watching a movie, so he didn't hear it. No, he was on the phone, so he put it on speaker so we could go out and listen with our nephew so he could hear it in Salt Lake.
Nice.
It was pretty cool.
I feel like kind of sounds like an old man snoring, just really far away, like a
Was
giant old man snoring very far away.
Well, that's sort of what the lake, I don't know, there seems like some mythology there. Seeing that same lake, Latimer was talking once again, he was ice skating and he was ice boating, and I didn't realize where I was at, definitely it was more snow. I thought we're done for in that season, but of course he found black ice where he was doing it just, you know, less than a mile away.
Of
So
course he did.
good for
You know, for
him.
most of us, black ice is a bad thing.
Yes, no, this is his favorite. And
It
it
sends
would
you off the road. That's his favorite.
well, and he so he was I'm so glad he got to do that, because this week on the morning show he got we and he got to celebrate his birthday.
Oh, 77. I'm so happy.
I know.
The other thing I wanted to do this morning was just do a little rundown, since I am happily celebrating my birthday today. I'm quite old, but Heidi laughs. Yeah, today is my 77th birthday. And on my 74th birthday, December 9th, 2022, we had a low of 10 degrees and a high of 33. Not altogether a bad day in early December. About 3 to 4 inches of settled snow on the ground. Skating and ice boating was brief. One day on Crooked with a skater on the lake, and the second day on Grace Lake in Bemidji, and did some skating and ice boating. In 2019, on today's date, 7 inches of new snow on the ground. Also, dark-eyed juncos were just beginning to leave. Also on my birthday in 2013, sundogs, a red fox that same year in 2010, a few crows around. And the note says, a few years ago, the sound of crows was absent through most of December and January, and beginning in about 2000 or a little bit before, they began to more stick around. And pine siskins in 2010, in 2009, light snow, fell on my birthday. The weeping willows were still a little bit green. 2007, I had minus 28 degrees on the morning of my birthday in 2007. That was a brisk morning. Red squirrels out and about. Yeah, 2007. Few and far between this cold morning. There's one here eating sunflower seeds, 28 below zero this morning of December 9th, 2007. Big flock of snow buntings in the Sabika area in 2006. I guess the one note that I did a little digging last night, I wondered what it was like in Park Rapids on the day of my birth. In 1948, the high was, in this is in Park Rapids, the high was 18 above, the low was 5 below zero. There was a half inch of new snow that fell. 2 days later, on the 11th, there was 5 more inches of snow. I lived on Big Sandy or Sand Lake, I can't remember. I only lived there for about 8 or 9 months, and then my father was a forester with the state, and they moved him around quite a bit. I have 6 brothers and sisters. 2 were born in Grand Rapids, 2 were born in Brainerd, 1 in Bemidji. I was born in Park Rapids, 1 sister in Minneapolis, so I guess that's 7. Anyway, moved around a lot until we settled into the Grand Rapids area in 1950, and we've kind of called this place home ever since. Not a native, but been here a while. Happy to be here, and happy to be here on a day like today when it's going to snow a little bit. And I celebrated my birthday yesterday by ice boating and the day before by skating, and it was lovely.
I would say he's not a native, but he's not an invasive species to the region.
No, I'd say he's naturalized.
Yes.
You know, he can hang around without damage to the native ecosystem.
Yeah, so many people were weighing in to John about his birthday, like Lori in Minneapolis saying, so grateful for all you teach us, John. Michael Small saying, best wishes on this day. Welcome to the 77 Club. You finally caught up. Happy birthday. And one that brought a tear to John's eye was Susan from Cotton. She said, I know what a humble man you are, but I remember how we worried about nature deficit disorder in our children when I worked at the zoo in the early 2000s. I truly think you have done an incredible amount to address that. And when I read that to John, you know, I could see kind of come over him this thing of kind of like when we celebrated 40 years of phenology. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe. He's like, I can't believe it's where it's at.
Yeah. I'm going to get teary talking about it. It's like, he's such a great example of how one ordinary person's passion can inspire and move so many people and change so many lives. He's absolutely changed mine. Like, I did not know this job existed and have found that it is the perfect job for me.
Yeah.
And it would not exist without John. And then there are all of these students who are learning about the outdoors, engaging and connecting. And then we've seen so many times that they go on and like, this really matters. It matters for our listeners. It's just amazing how many people's lives he's touched.
You really hit on something there. As I've explained KEXE to people, his passion comes through. You know, if John was a stuffy guy who was trying to impart knowledge on us, no, this wouldn't work. He's not. He wants to talk, and he's made... You know, I certainly, before I started co-hosting with him, when Scott Hall sat in the chair, I listened, you know, and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel so fortunate that I get to co-host with him because I just notice things very differently. And I don't feel like I can't mention anything to him. You know, I can just say, I saw this thing and I don't understand it, John. You know, I don't feel like I have to know to talk to him. I feel like we talk about this a lot, but it's so much more than nature. It's so much more than science. It's about connection to something, to people, to where you live. It's like your boots are on the ground and it's solid.
Yes, absolutely. there's a sense of, I guess, a sense of place, a sense of community that, yeah, I've certainly found here and found through studying phonology that, it's just hard to put into words,
Yeah.
but
We
is
won't
really
even
meaningful.
make ourselves cry anymore about people like Maggie Anderson or anything.
Oh, I love her.
Someday
Maggie.
we have a I have a recording of like 8-year-old Maggie reporting. I mean, I have a lot of them
That's awesome.
because she used to call in often when she was young, and
Yeah.
she would be live from the duck boat with her dad and John Latimer. And now she is, what is she doing? You've talked to her more recently.
Last I heard from her, she was working on her PhD at the University of Minnesota studying phenology in native plants. She may have graduated by now, but one of my favorite parts of Maggie and my relationship is that we will text each other John Latimer quotes.
Yeah.
Because John Latimer, out of context, just sometimes really, just hits a great note. My
Yeah.
favorite from this morning was, April is a banger month out of 77-year-old John Latimer's mouth.
I know.
And then another one was like, I have this flower and I'm peering into its nether regions.
Of course he is. Where else?
No other way to phrase that, John.
Yeah. We're also
Yep.
working on, we're going to be putting out a little gift guide from the morning show, whether it is the specific lures from Jeff Sundin on our early bird fishing guide, or as every year, John says, get someone a hand lens. That is one of the best
Yep.
gifts you could give someone. And you're going to get me some book ideas too that we can get in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a great way to be connected. I'm still looking at the possibility of the bird buddy or whatever it might be called, whatever brand it is, where you do that. Have you hooked yours up yet? Your bird feeder that
Oh,
has the camera.
yeah.
Yeah.
Birdify. I was intending to do that on my week off last week, and then it got cold and I got
It's
wimpy.
okay. The guilt on her face right now. Oh my gosh. But hey, we're always learning something new. When I was on the air this week, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to talk to Charlie about this. We're going to take a listen to one of our favorites, Pam Perry. She joins us once a month to talk birding. And this is December's a big month because it's Christmas bird count time. But she had a lot to say about some of your favorite things, the frogs.
One other thing before I talk about bird counts, I would like to go back to last month. I was talking about frozen frogs.
Yes.
I was talking about the ones that can freeze and go under the leaf litter and do all that, and that some of them, the true frogs, leopard frogs, green frogs, mink frogs, all are under the water. And John, you asked me about the boreal chorus frog.
Yes.
Yes, and the first thing out of my mouth, because it wasn't on my list of those that freeze, I said under the water, and you said, I didn't know that. And I immediately thought, I don't think that's right. So I'm admitting that I was wrong. It just popped out. I had to do some serious looking, and I do that whenever I'm, what really is this? It took me a while to find, because I'm thinking, who has found these frogs when they're in the winter? They're tiny.
Yeah,
Anyways,
you're lucky to find one in the spring when they're singing.
right. And so I did find that, yes, they do make the chemicals and can freeze parts of their bodies, and it saves their and protects their organs. And I learned a new word. It's called brumate.
Whoa.
Do you know that word?
No, I do not.
It was new for me, and I've been a biologist for decades, and I love words that describe things. Brumate. And it means a state of dormancy characterized by reduced metabolic activity. So it's not
Wow.
hibernation, it's something different, and they've given it a name. And so I was really excited. So I'm looking all about chorus frogs. I'm going, oh, I learned something new. This is all so great. And so they say now that these frogs brumate, or they're brumating. And it applies also to the frogs under the water that are getting oxygen through their skin.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? But I did want to do a correction.
I'm curious, would you apply the same term to, for instance, garter snakes? They are, they're sort of like hovering. Sorry.
You know, they need to go underground,
yep.
I think, above freezing.
Yep. Yep,
they do. So, you know, they don't go into this extreme reduced metabolic state.
Okay.
You know, which is basically a state of suspended animation.
Right.
I'm not sure. I'm going to just say, I'm not sure. I tell my friends, they think I have answers for everything. I go, I'm not always right. No, it's sometimes I have to look stuff up.
Oh, me too. And trust me, I am. I've got the word down on a slip of paper here, and I am going to be doing a little research myself this next week. I'll try to learn more.
So,
lovely word.
So interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
And that they had because that word wasn't around when I was younger.
I have never run across it.
I know, because I'd never seen it.
First of all, I love a good word.
Yeah.
Like a new vocabulary word.
Right.
Just the best. Also, Pam Perry.
Yeah.
But
she's my bromate. I'm telling you.
My bromate.
Yes. What it sounded like to me when she first started talking about it. Did you know this word?
I do know this word.
Okay.
All right. So this is a word that I came across in graduate school when I was studying reptiles. We had what we called the brumation station, where we had a bunch of hatchling painted turtles that we had collected during the field season and kept basically in this big old refrigerator that was set a little bit under freezing throughout the winter, and then we released them in the spring. But we needed them to go into the brumation station so that they didn't use up too much of their energy and they could be healthy when we released them. So I did know this word. I do think, so there are some scientific terms that if you like use a word wrong, scientists are going to kind of judge you for it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you say that that rattlesnake poisoned me,
uh-huh.
A biologist is going to be like, no, it envenomated you. This venom is something that's injected into your bloodstream. Poison is something that you eat. And, you know, we're all nerds. We love an actually. But I think, so brumation, as I understand it, and I may be wrong, brumation is something that primarily ectotherms, so cold-blooded animals, that happens to cold-blooded animals during these cold seasons. The other words we use a lot for that are like hibernation and torpor.
Torpor is a good word too.
Right? Also, okay, so there's hibernation and so you hibernate or you go into hibernation.
Mm-hmm.
You brumate or you go into brumation. The other one is estivate, or you go into estivation, which is the like period of dormancy during the hot months. But then there's torpor, but no torporation.
Okay.
Yeah, you just go into torpor, but there isn't like a verb for it. But yeah, torpor and hibernation are things that mammals do. And then estivation can be either a mammal or a reptile.
What I like,
all sorts of dormancies.
What I like here is, you know, Pam feeling the need to correct herself and not feeling any guilt about doing that. Mm-hmm. It's just more knowledge, and it's, I didn't quite get it right. And then John did it again. She's going to have to figure out the snakes.
Yeah. You would call it brumation in snakes as well. Reptiles, amphibians, I think even fish, brumation. But yeah, I mean, I've also definitely had errors in the newsletter. The northern hawk owl, I think I called a hawk, not an owl, but I might still have that backwards. It might be an owl that behaves like a hawk, or it might be a hawk that behaves like an owl. I think it's an owl that behaves like a hawk. Anyways, so I got that one wrong once, and the reader very kindly pointed that out. And then I think in a more recent one, I said that red foxes and gray foxes are closely related. They are not closely related. They are on wildly different ends of the canid family, which I didn't know. And then I just happened upon that fact a little while later. No one had corrected me, but I found it. I was like, oh, that's good to know. I just kind of assumed foxes are a Here's another word for you, a monophyletic group. They all share a common ancestor.
Oh, I'm going to make you do a spelling bee on that. What?
Monophyletic.
That was a long one there. Pam was also telling us about, she was very excited, of course, about birds.
Mm-hmm.
She's seeing some pine grosbeaks, but wanting more. But we were hearing from lots of people during our morning show, including Julie in Cook, who has, gosh, it's got to be 30 years. She's led the Christmas bird count there, but she has a ton in Cook of grosbeaks. She said,
so jealous.
Pine grosbeaks coming to our feeders daily and occasionally an evening grosbeak or two. I have not been seeing other winter finches yet, but I hope that they will show up.
I'm so jealous. We don't get the grosbeaks down where I live, either the evening or the pine grosbeaks.
Okay.
We get, you know, in the summer, we get the red-breasted grosbeaks. But I'm just looking on iNaturalist right now to see how far south they've been spotted this year.
Also, one I wanted to tell you about that came in today. Noah mm-hmm. from Britt texted us. He said he watched an ermine in our yard catch not one but two voles after several minutes of popping in and out of the snow, bouncing off grass and twigs like a pinball. Still have plenty of pine grosbeaks, up to 20 at once now. Also, our neighbor saw a very large bull moose just about 2 miles from our place crossing the road, still waiting for my turn.
You guys get all the fun stuff up
I
there.
I know.
Okay, that's a lie. We have plenty of fun stuff down here. But it's hard to hear about like things like pine grosbeaks and a bull moose. And I'll be like, maybe I do need to move 4 to 5 hours north. Oh, and an ermine. So another fun vocabulary thing. An ermine is a short or long-tailed weasel in its winter coat. A stoat is the same species, but in its summer coat.
Stoat?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Huh. And that's, they developed those terms because they're, you know, very popular in the fur industry. So they have, they're so soft and pretty.
Not to name drop here, but I just posted that how jealous you were going to be to Mark Jacobs because he posted a video of.
It's a pine marten.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yep.
I want it. I want it so bad.
Again,
I just want to see one in the wild.
Again, for me, I heard the word pine marten before I ever saw one. I've only seen one once, mm-hmm. but I assumed it was a bird. Pine marten sounds to me like a bird.
Mm-hmm.
But it is.
But it's marten, not martin.
Okay.
Yeah, they're so cool. And so many people don't know that they're here. Mm-hmm. And they're just like the most adorable animal you'll ever see. It's like a red panda mixed with a weasel. They're so cute and their paws are so big. They're so fluffy. I have feelings about it.
Yeah, you do. Let's take a listen to one of our student reports that came in this week. I love hearing the kids who, I mean, they always have wonder, but especially when they are leaving their home territory and going to places like the Long Lake Conservation Center.
Hi, this is Maisie,
DK,
Charlie,
Marlo,
Lily,
Riley,
and Natalie
from Andover Elementary.
Our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on December 1st through the 5th was cold. The low was 12 degrees below zero. This was the coldest day of the season so far, and the first below zero reading since January 19th of 2025.
The cold didn't stop us from exploring nature. One of the highlights was seeing a pine grosbeak. The last sighting was a couple of weeks ago when a flock of grosbeaks were migrating through. It is not common to see pine grosbeaks at Long Lake.
During our explorations of the woods and wetlands on foot and by snowshoe, we saw hundreds of animal tracks and trails, plus a whole lot of scat. That's science for poop.
We saw a deer bed plus deer, bunny, coyote, squirrel tracks, and mouse and vole tunnels under the snow. The fancy science word for those tunnels is subnevian trails.
Our group saw a couple of very large pileated woodpeckers on the suite and chickadees, nuthatches, and gray squirrels on the feeders.
We saw a snow spider in the bog. The two most common types of spiders that are active on the top of snow are dwarf spiders and wolf spiders. The one we saw was a wolf spider. These are pretty big and scary looking, but are harmless to people and eat lots of bugs.
At night, we saw the December cold supermoon. It was 10% bigger than normal because it's about 17,000 miles closer to Earth. We heard the lake creak and crack loudly as ice formed. A long lake teacher measured the thickness of the ice 20 feet from shore. It is 5 inches thick.
We had a great time in the snow and wanted to remind everyone to unplug, get outside,
and live connected.
Amazing. We couldn't, like, if we had given them a script of what to cover,
yeah,
they couldn't have done it better. Fun science words, mm-hmm. pine grosbeaks, the ice even, like, making those cracking and groaning noises.
Little wolf Thanks spider. Little wolf spider I, for you.
Yeah. Oh. Amazing.
We've been talking about a lot of different things in this episode of the Season Watch Pod. I think that we would love to hear from people, voice memos this week, especially as we were hearing on the morning show through our text line about the birds at the feeders, because Christmas bird counts are coming. And next week, we're going to talk with someone that is going with John Latimer on the Christmas bird count. So I think that would be a good idea for people to do.
Absolutely. I would also love to hear any of your favorite science words.
There we go. Yeah. You can find the link through kexe.org. Look for Season Watch, or on your podcast platform, there's a link there to send your voice memo through SpeakPipe. Oh, go ahead.
Actually, before we do that, I remembered I went off on a tangent and forgot to come back to the thing.
Yeah.
So there are words that scientists will judge you for not using correctly. The whole hibernate, torpor, estivation, brumation thing is not one of them. I looked in one of my field guides today, and they in the glossary, they had brumate, but they did not have, they had estivate, but they did not have brumate. Okay. They just called it hibernation in the reptiles and amphibians book.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes there are these like very, if you are a biologist talking specifically about like all of the different power saving modes that animals use, you are going to need these more specific words, but no one's going to judge you if you say that a reptile is hibernating.
I love the power saving mode. I feel like I'm entering into that of the less light in the day and kind of slowing down and as we head into the holidays. There are still lots of things to see, and we want to hear from you. We want to thank folks for all the people that contributed to today's Season Watch Pod, the conversations. Some of them are made possible by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. I got to do the little audio of the ice chorus on my lake, and we're going to end today with
The Calls of a Pine Grosbeak, and that's recorded by Becca Engdahl.
Loading, loading, loading. I don't know why it's taking so long. Here we go.
Season Watch is a KAXE podcast for the curious. It's filled with the delights of nature in northern Minnesota. I'm Charlie Mitchell. That was Heidi Holton. And happy birthday, John Latimer.